Kof Hei Nissen, Tuesday the 17th of April, by Gabby Kuskel. Can I put croutons in my soup on Shabbos?
Good morning, everyone. Close to a year ago, I stood here too discussing the malachus of Losh and Toshon. Wasn't exactly here, a few feet away. I see this beautiful extension to this Malkum Torah. May this Malkum Torah grow and grow, and all other Malkums grow and grow. The Hamzal Torah Adira. Amen. The question is, are you allowed to put croutons into your chicken soup on Shabbos? This will depend on various components. So it's necessary to, especially in order to appreciate exactly the intricate how the halacha is derived, it's necessary to give a brief overview of the halacha of Bishul. I'll break this up into 4 points. The first point will be a brief definition of what the Lamed Tes halachas are about, where they're derived from. Secondly will be a definition of what Bishul is doing, what is forbidden to do by Bishul. The third point will be what intensity of heat causes a Bishul. And the fourth point will be two exceptions to the rule. Then we'll be able to take these 4 points and apply them to the question and see the necessary halachic ramifications. What is forbidden to be done on Shabbos? We all know the 39 malachas. What's a malacha? Literally it means toil, hard work. That's not the case. We all know flicking a light switch, carrying a tissue in your pocket outside Eruv, is a malacha. Where schlepping heavy furniture across a room, that is, there's no problem in our Torah. What's a malacha? So this is a basic principle in the Lamed Tes malachas. V'shomru b'nei Yisrael to Shabbos, Klal Yisrael, we keep Shabbos, ki sheishes yomim, asa Hashem es Hashemayim v'sarets. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in 6 days. And this also will explain why Shabbos is such an important mitzvah. That someone who's over Shabbos, he gets the death penalty, he's no longer considered part of Klal Yisrael to the extent that he got certain dinim of goyim when he touches wine, etc. What's the great importance of the mitzvah of Shabbos? Shabbos is here in order that we testify that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Why? Because Hashem is Baruch when he created the world in 6 days, on the seventh day he rested. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu rest from on the seventh day? Hard work? There's no hard work for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu rested from creating, from creativity. On Shabbos we have to rest from Yetzirah, from creating. That's the basic principle of Shabbos. All the Lamed Tes Malachos are 39 principles of Yetzirah. There has to be some transformation, some element of creativity taking place. Therefore it's essential to define each Malacha, what transformation is taking place, and then we'll be able to see what will fit inside the Malacha and what will all be beyond the Malacha and will not be forbidden. That also explains why Shabbos is such a fundamental mitzvah. Because each week we are physically testifying once again that our belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by us refraining from the Malacha, we are once again testifying by on Shabbos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in 6 days, on the seventh day he rested, and that will lead to the rest of Yadus. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, we are obligated to fulfill HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah, etc.
What makes it more creative? By carrying a tissue over a moving soul.
So that's what we'll define. Each one of the Lamed Tes, we'll get there eventually, but we'll define each part of the Lamed Tes Malachos has to be some level of creativity. Just the point raised is the point which the Gemara raises. When the Gemara goes through in Shabbos, the Lamed Tes Malachos, the Gemara asks on Hitzah specifically, "My Ka'ovid, what have you done?" The Gemara asks you a question, what have I created by transforming something from one shus to another shus? And the Gemara answers that transforming the physical location of an item is also considered some sort of Yetzirah. But that the Gemara raises Yetzirah specifically as a question, and the Gemara does call Yetzirah Melacha Gerua for that reason. But coming to Bishul, what is the Melacha of Bishul? Bishul is transforming something through heat. A non-food item and a food item. A non-food item such as, for example, wax. Melting a hard wax and softening it, transforming its substance through heat, or taking a soft item, a wet piece of wood, and drying out through fire, hardening a soft item. We're going to the Melacha of Bishul in food. The Melacha of Bishul by foods are two This is the second point. The first point we already explained what the Lamb Testament is. The second point, second snippet, will be an overview of what is the Melacha Bishul. Melacha Bishul by food, there are two specific transformations that take place. By solids and by liquids. By solids, the Melacha is making an inedible item edible. You take a raw piece of food, you place it on the fire, and you're transforming it. It was before inedible. Once it's been made edible, that is considered a significant transformation, and that is the Melacha of Bishul. The Melacha of Bishul is learned from the Mishkan. All Lamatet's Melachas are learned from the Mishkan. The Torah juxtaposed in Parshat Vayakhel the Melacha of Shmir Shabbos, the obligation to keep Shabbos, prior to the Binyan of Mishkan. Explaining Chazal, Rashi brings it there, to teach us that the Melacha of Shabbos has precedence over the Melacha of the Mishkan. You cannot build the Mishkan on Shabbos. In the Mishkan, they used to cook samamolim. They used to cook dyes in order to dye the tapestries, the proyches, etc. That is the 11th Melacha of the Lamentest Melacha, Bishul. You cannot cook with the heat of a fire. You cannot transform something with the heat of a fire. So we said there's two ways how you can transform foods through fire. Solids and liquids. By solids, the transformation is making an inedible substance edible. Therefore, once you take a raw food and you place it on a fire, once it becomes edible, and it doesn't have to be fully edible, once it's half edible, halachically this is termed Kamakol Ben Vesoy. Ben Vesoy was infamous bandit, the highwayman. He never had the luxury to wait around to cook his food till it was fully cooked because he was on the run. Therefore, as soon as it was edible, the early stage was edible, which is half cooked, he used to eat it. That proves us, that just demonstrates to us that that is considered you have transformed it, you have made it edible. Even though you would not sell that to your guests, and you wouldn't like that, unless you enjoy sushi, that would not be the case of that is considered edible. Stephanie, you have done the tikkun official, you have made something inedible into edible. Obviously, even if you have a food which is half cooked, if you continue cooking it, you're still doing the melacha official until it's fully cooked, because you're transforming it, making it more edible. This will lead us to the basic premise, which is since the melacha official we've just defined is making a raw food, inedible food, edible, once it's already edible, there's no further melacha official taking place. That is the principle which Chazal call Ein Bishul Acha Bishul. Once you've already cooked something, there's no further, it's not forbidden to reheat it. If you have a cold piece of chicken which is fully cooked in your fridge on Shabbos, and you want to reheat it on Shabbos, so there's no problem to reheat on Shabbos. A side note, we're obviously not talking about putting it on the fire on Shabbos, because that is forbidden the Rabbonim because of Maris Ayin. You can never put something on Shabbos on actual fire because that looks to a viewer as if you're cooking in Shabbos. We're talking about obviously placing it in a place where there's no problem with Marathayim, such as you're fulfilling the conditions of Chazorah, another discussion, or as you're heating up next to a fire where that's not the normal way you cook, there's no Marathayim. But once a piece of chicken in my fridge has been fully cooked, it's a solid food, there's no problem to place it next to a fire where there's no problem with Marathayim, no problem to place it next to a fire to reheat it. Why? Because I'm not doing the melacha official. The melacha official is transforming inedible food to make it edible, and this is fully edible. No problem. That is by a solid. By a liquid, however, therefore, by a solid, it's not considered a significant change to make it hot. The change is making it edible. By a liquid, however, it's considered a very significant change to give heat to a liquid. A person will not drink their cold chicken soup. And many people won't drink their cold coffee either. Making a liquid hot is considered transforming it significantly enough to make it considered a tirah official. Therefore, even if I have a cooked chicken soup, if I have a cooked chicken soup and it cooled down, I would be forbidden to reheat this chicken soup to Yalta lettuce for you. We'll just define it briefly in a second. Because that is transforming, I have given it heat. So we have just defined now the second point was the melacha of bishul by foods. There's two parts, solids and liquids. By solid, the melacha is making an inedible food edible, and therefore, once it is edible, there's no further melacha. It's not forbidden to heat reheat a fully cooked food. By liquids, the melacha is heating up. Therefore, even if you've got a cooked liquid, once it's lost its heat, once it's no longer, a person will not eat this, will not consider it warm enough to eat it, it's forbidden to reheat it. That was the second point. What is the temperature of... even though we said, by solid, you cannot put a raw food and cook it for Machon Nesoi, it's also forbidden to put a raw food in a place which has a temperature of Yad Tzeled Espoi. Yad Tzeled Espoi literally translates, the hand would burn. The exact temperature is a halachic controversy between the Poskim. Just practically to say the temperature is a bare effect, 42-43 degrees centigrade. In order to translate that into practical terms, a person has a normal bath around body temperature, 37, 38 degrees. That means the temperature of a hot bath is like 40 degrees. 42 degrees is hotter than the temperature of a hot bath. Right? Now remember that we're talking about where it's too hot for your hand. The way HaKadosh Baruch Hu made is that the mouth has way higher tolerance of heat. You could sip a hot tea and you won't scald your tongue, whereas if you put your finger in the tea, it would be painful. That means we're talking about the temperature of Yetzer Hara is the temperature of a 42 degrees, a bit hotter than a hot bath. You cannot put a raw food in the temperature of Yetzer Hara Boy, even if it won't reach right now, Machon Sorry. The reason is because this heat has the intensity to be able to, has the power to be able to make it reach Machon Ben Sorry. However, if the heat is lower than Yetzer Hara Boy, it's not forbidden to place a raw food in that spot, because that heat is considered powerless to be able to cause a vessel. Okay, so just to recap the first 2 points, then we'll move on to the final 2 points. The first point was, the Lamed Tes Melachos are all some element of Yetzirah. The second point is that Yetzirah by Bishul is transforming something through heat. By solid, it's transforming, making an inedible substance edible. And by liquid, it is reheating a liquid. On to point number three. What intensity of heat causes a Bishul? Not every intensity of heat causes a Bishul. Remember, the Lamed Tes Melachos are all learned from the Mishkan. They took place in the Mishkan. In the Mishkan, they cooked the dyes on a fire. Chazal will therefore exclude, for example, cooking heat using solar heat. That's not similar to fire. Even fire, not every heat which stems from a fire has intensity to cause a visual. And we'll demonstrate this basic for what's necessary to say. There's four basic levels of heat, intensity of heat. Klirishon, Irui Klirishon, Klisheni, and Klishishi. And we'll just define them and give practical examples. In a Mishkan, they cooked with a Klirishon Aleish. That means the actual pot was on the fire. In Monday terms, that would be the ceramic pot inside the crock pot while it's still connected to the wall. That is a Klirishon Aleish. Or you have your urn still connected to the socket. That's a Klirishon Aleish. You got your soup pot on the blech. That's a Klirishon Aleish. That's the way they cook in the Mishkan. Not only the Klirishon Aleish is forbidden in our Torah. Toldos Aleish, something which derives its heat from a fire, that means you take your pot off the blech. The heat of the pot came from the fire. It's no longer on the fire. That's called Toldos Aleish. That derives its heat from the fire. That is also forbidden in our Torah. That means if you take a crock pot out of the ceramic pot out of the crock pot, you take your pot off the blech, that is the Klirishon Shaloi Aleish. That's also forbidden in our Torah. That has the intensity to cook in our Torah. That has the walls of the pot are hot. They were heated up by the fire. They have the insulating factor on the contents of the pot. They have the intensity of heat to cook. That is the first level, Klirishon. Both Aleish, that's the Av, Shaloi Aleish is Toldos Aleish, those are Klirishon. They can cook in our Torah. Irui Klirishon. Irui Klirishon is when you're releasing the tap of your urn. The water is now streaming out, it's left the urn. This water now is not as hot as when it was inside the Klirishon. Why? Because it lacks the insulating factor of the hot walls of the Klirishon. It's exposed to the external elements, the air, etc. However, it's still connected, it still has its umbilical cord, it's still connected to the Klirishon. Without going into the intricates, Irui Klirishon can also cook in a Torah. There are differences, but Irui Klirishon also has intensity to cook in a Torah. That's the second stage. So you've got Klirishon when it's still within the walls of the Klirishon, Irui Klirishon once it's left it. The third stage is Klisheni. When I have filled up the mug beneath the urn, okay, the urn was a Klirishon. When the stream was coming out, that was Irui Klirishon, it was exposed to the elements. When it is filled up, I fill up my empty mug. This mug is now a Klisheni. Why? Because it never had the insulating factor of a Klirishon. It's got the cooling effect of the cold mug. Plus, it's no longer connected, like Irui, to the Klirishon. This has a way lower intensity of heat. And Chazal teaches us the following statement, in the Gemara and Shabbos, stuff on base, Shraminov, Klisheni Eilem Mevashel. Klisheni has not got the power to cook. It hasn't got the intensity to cook. That means we're talking about, just to pay attention, a boiling hot mug. I just filled out from the urn. It could be way hotter than outside for it. It could be 70, 80 degrees centigrade. But it lacks the intensity. Heat is not the only component which causes a fish on Shabbos. You also need intensity. In a Klirishon, the heat is staying there because you've got the insulating walls. In a Klisheni, the heat's escaping because you have the cold walls. Therefore, when you have a Klisheni, even if the temperature of the liquid inside it, once I fill out my mug, you know, it may be boiling hot, it's not. It cannot cook because the heat is escaping. That's a Klisheni. Despite the fact that Chazal tell me that Klisheni Einam Vashal has not got a power to cook, this is not true on all foods. We see in the Gemara's various examples of Kalei Habishal, foods which are extra sensitive. The Gemara's examples are Meliyah Chayoshon, salt of fish. Since flaky substances such as tea bags, raw eggs, etc., these cook very, very quickly in any without, you don't need an intense heat to cause them to cook. Therefore, even though Kli Sheni cannot cook, cannot do enough Habishal, but on Kalei Habishal they can. Chazal Telah, I mean, Mishabura brings this down, Shemeshkes probably sees Kotham, brings down that we are nowadays no longer aware what is considered Kalei Habishal. Therefore, we have to be Machmir on any food and have to suspect that this may be a Kalei Habishal. Unless we have the foods which Gemara clearly states cannot cook inside a Kli Sheni, which the Gemara gives three, four examples, water, shemen zayis, etc. Besides those examples which clearly cannot cook in a Kli Sheni, all other foods we have to suspect they can cook in a Kli Sheni, therefore you cannot put any food inside a Kli Sheni because we are worried it may be Kalei Habishal. Okay, so we've already gone through three of the stages of the intensive heat. Kli Rishon, we said, always can cook when a Torah. Iri Kli Rishon, that means the stream of water we're left to earn, can also cook. Which meant if you had a mug, and you had a tea bag in your mug, it would be forbidden to pour the hot water on earth directly on the tea bag. Why? Because the tea bag is raw, the tea leaves have never been cooked, and the hot water is iri, is going to cook the tea bags. If you're filling up an empty mug of hot water, can you place your tea bag in that mug? No. Why? Because even though the mug is now a tisheni, we said a tisheni can cook Kalei Habishal. Tea is Kalei Habishal, can cook. You would be forbidden to put the tea bag into the Kalei Habishal. So we've gone through Kirishan, Irritation, and Klisheni. The final stage necessary for us is Klishashi. If you take this mug, which I filled up on the urn, and pour it into the second mug, that is now called Klishashi. Klishashi is also a controversy amongst the place. Ramosha Feinstein writes, Klishashi ain't a vashal klal, even Kalei Habishal. Klishashi doesn't cook. Therefore, if on Shabbos you ever want to make a tea, all you have to simply do is make a Klishashi. Fill up your mug with hot water from the urn, transfer to second, that's going to be now your Kli Sheni. Transfer to second bag, that's the Kli Shishi. Place your tea bag in the Kli Shishi. Even if it's boiling hot, perfectly fine, according to Moshe Feinstein. Now, you just have to be aware, if you're doing this on Shabbos, if you want to take out your tea bag, you've got to just take caution that you shouldn't transgress Chas V'Shalom the Melacha of Boira, which is disregarding the undesirable part of your mixture. Since the tea bag is considered mixed with water, if you take the tea bag out on its own, that would be better. You've got to take the tea bag on the spoon with some water, with some tea too. Therefore, you're taking the playlist, tea bag plus the oil. That's the side point. But you're allowed to make a tea bag, you're allowed to put any raw item or food inside a Kli Shishi on Shabbos. Okay, so that was the third point we discussed. Just a brief recap, and we'll get to the fourth point, and then we'll be able to apply it to croutons. The first point was every melacha is a yetzira, some element of creation, creativity, transformation taking place. The melacha of Bishul, the creativity which is taking place by Bishul, is transforming something through heat. By a food, we said it's taking a raw food and making it edible. That's the transformation. You cannot even place it, we said, in a spot which is yatta let it boil, which is a temperature of 42 degrees, temperature of hot bath, because that has intensity the power to cook it. What sort of heat has intensity to cause this Bishul? That's the third point. We said you cannot put anything in a clearishim, irreclearishim. You cannot place it in a Kli Sheni, neither in a Kli Sheni because of a suspicion that it may be Kalei Habishal. You can place it in a Kli Shlishi. Okay? That was the third point. Now coming up to the fourth point, and then we'll be able to apply it, Bez Hashem. Fourth point is two exceptions to the two previous rules. Even though we said that the Melacha of Bishal is making an inedible substance edible, so we said that leads us to the Halacha of Ein Bishal Acha Bishal. Once you have a food which is fully edible, you have your check in the fridge, there's no problem to reheat it. That is not an ironclad rule. That means it's only when you're reheating it in the same manner, the same fashion as it was originally reheated. For example, if you have a cooked food, you've got lokshen, cold lokshen in your fridge, and you want to place it into your pot of into your chicken soup pot on Shabbos, you buy your chicken soup pot, obviously when it's off the fire, because otherwise you've got the marasayan dishes. You got your chicken soup pot, you just took off the bleh. You want to put your cold lokshen inside there, there's no problem, because your lokshen was cooked, and it's fully edible. You're putting in your reheating in a Kli Rishon, there's no problem, ain't bishul acha bishul, because it was cooked and you're recooking it. But if you're using a different method, a different mean of reheating it, you're doing, this is called in Chazal, yesh bishul acha fir. It was originally baked, you got a piece of challah, it's fully edible. No problem to reheat your challah, because I'm not transforming something that was edible, I'm not making any more edible by heating it. But if I'm going to heat it up through a different fashion, not through heat, through cooking, that we do consider, if you dip a challah inside a Kli Rishon, even though it's been fully cooked. So according to the principle of the English Rabbi Mishal, there should be no problem to take this fully edible challah and put it into my chicken soup pot because I'm not doing anything more. I'm not making it more edible. However, since it's a different way of reheating it, since it's, I'm heating it through the heat of a liquid, this is a problem of Bishal Achar Bishal, because we consider that a transformation. It was, till now it was heated through dry heat, now it's being, it's a different method of heat, it's being cooked. Therefore, there is a problem of Bishal Achar Fiyah. This is the Machlokes Rishonim. However, this is the way the Ramah Paskens, well, there is Bishal Achar Fiyah. Therefore, you cannot take a challah, which was baked, even though we can reheat the challah, or no problem to reheat the challah on Shabbos, because it's baked and you are making more edible. That's only when you're reheating it with the same way as it's originally heated, when it was with the dry heat. Place it in a place with a dry heat. To dip it into a soup is forbidden. That is the exception on the rule of English Lach Avishal. That means you can't take a challah and put it inside a clearishon, obviously, because that cooks. You can't pour hot water onto crumbs of challah, because that's irritation. You can't take a challah and dip it into klisheni. That means if you fill up your mug with hot water from the urn, you can't take a cookie and dip it inside your mug. Because we said klisheni can cook challah abishal. So you can't take, and since if you take that principle, that klisheni can cook challah abishal, and you take the last principle we just mentioned, that there is bishal akhafiyah, so if you're taking a cookie and dipping inside your mug, that is bishal, you're now akhafiyah, you cannot take your cookie and dip it into a klisheni mug. That is the one exception of point number four. The second exception to the rule is the halacha of matzekes. To keep it extremely brief, matzekes means a ladle. How would we, if I ask you a question, how would you define a ladle? He said, remember, a klisheni can cook, klisheni can cook, klisheni can cook, a klisheni can't. You got your soup pot. You're taking out the soup from a ladle, and you're pouring it into your soup bowl. Do we consider your soup bowl a klish lishi? Because it was the pot was a klirishon, the ladle transformed into klisheni, and now the soup bowl is a klish lishi. Or do we say no? Since a regular klisheni is when you pour the soup into let's say a tureen, you empty the hot water from the klirishon from the urn into your mug, that became a klisheni, and now you're pouring it into another cup, that becomes a klish lishi. But when you're taking something out of the actual klirishon, the ladle entered the soup pot. It wasn't poured out the soup pot. When the ladle was in the soup pot, it became a part of the klirishon at that moment. So therefore I'm really moving a klirishon from a soup pot, and when I point to the soup pot, it will become a klisheni. The big difference for this discussion is, will my soup bowl be a klisheni or klishishi? For example, can I dip challah in my soup bowl? If the soup bowl will be a klisheni, you can't dip challah in your soup bowl, because of the principle of yesh bishlach hafiyah. If the soup bowl is considered klishishi, there's no problem to dip challah into my soup bowl. This is a big machlokes, essential in the Maharil, in Dina Hagdola, the Taz brings in Yerideya. Mishnah Brura brings down in a couple of places, we are machmi. We consider the leila as a klirishon. Therefore, my soup bowl is considered klisheni. Therefore, I cannot put anything raw, I'll tell you there's exceptions to this, but general, I cannot put anything raw into my soup bowl if it was filled up with a ladle. I cannot put raw spices into my soup bowl, anything uncooked into my soup bowl, if it's filled up with a ladle. Why? Because the ladle is a klirishon, the soup bowl is a klisheni. If I can't, I wouldn't be able to place spices into my soup bowl if it's not spicy enough.
Salt?
If it depends, if the salt's been cooked. If the salt has already been cooked in its purifying process, no problem, because of English Lach Avishal. If the salt has never been cooked, you'll be forbidden to place it into a klisheni either. Salt, there's something to discuss about, but in terms of simplifying. Therefore, the question is, the point number four was, there were two exceptions to the rules. Even though we said there's no bishul ach bishul, once something's fully edible, there's no problem to reheat it, that's only when you're reheating it with the same heat. If you're using a different sort of heat to reheat it, problem. You can't, if you have something baked, you can't put it after, you can't cook it. You can't put it in a klirishon or in a klisheni. That was the first point, the first exception. Second exception was a ladle. Even though a ladle, when I'm filling out my bowl, does seem to be a kli shlishi, halakhically we say a ladle is still part of the klirishon, and when I'm transforming to my soup bowl, the soup bowl will still be considered klisheni. Okay, just to recap the 4 points, then we're going to apply now. The 4 points were, every malacha is some element of yetzira, transforming. The malacha, second point was, malacha of bishul is transforming something through heat, making an inedible substance edible. You can't make an inedible substance edible through heat. You can't take a raw food and place it on fire and make it edible. The third point was the intensity of heat. Clearishan, irrecleerishan, clearishani, we hold you cannot put anything in. Clearishishi, you can. The fourth point was that there are two exceptions. Even though we said there's no bishul achabishul, but if you're using a different sort of heat, there is bishul achafia. And a ladle will not make something a clearishishi, it'll still be considered a clearishani. Applying these points, let's go on to croutons. The question was, can you place croutons into your chicken soup on Shabbos? So it depends. Really, there are three sorts of croutons. There's baked croutons, there's fried croutons. In fried croutons, there's shallow fried croutons. Some people take bread, chop it up, fry it in the frying pan. And there's deep fried croutons. Deep fried croutons are considered bishul. You put the croutons inside a large pot of liquid, boiling hot oil, and you cook them. That's considered bishul. Therefore, there's no problem, because of the premise, the principle of ein bishul acha bishul, you're allowed to take deep fried croutons and place them even in a clearishan. You now take your, obviously when it's off the fire, because of the problem of marasayin. You now take your soup pot off the fire and place deep fried croutons directly into the soup pot, because ein bishul acha bishul. They were once cooked, so to speak, they were deep fried, and now they are there's no problem bishul, so you can put them into your clearishan. That is deep fried croutons. Baked croutons, if you took a piece of salad, old salad, and you baked them in the oven until they can crisply hard, you know, these bread like croutons, there's a problem of bishul acha fia. Therefore, you will not be able to put those croutons inside your clearishan, inside your soup pot, or in a klisheni either. But in a klishishi, you're allowed to put these croutons, because a klishishi cannot cook. The question is my soup bowl considered klishishi? We said the soup bowl is not considered klishishi, because we consider the ladle as a klirishan. However, here there's an exception. Here, the Mishavura brings down, you can combine these two lenient opinions. Since there's a machlokes in 2 points, you'll have to combine them, and you'll be allowed to put croutons inside a soup bowl which was filled up by a ladle. We will regard the soup bowl as a klirishishi for this point, because we're combining the 2 points you mentioned. Firstly, we're combining, there's a whole machlokes, we said, whether there is a problem of bishul achafia, whether there's any problem at all to cook something after it's been baked, because it's ready edible, we said. You're not really transforming it. We said there's a machlokes. The Ramah is machmeh, and we hold that since you're heating up to a different sort of heat through cooking, there's a problem. But really, there's a machlokes whether there's any problem at all of bishul achafia. That's the first point. Second point, we said a soup bowl should be theoretically considered like a klishishi in its own right, because it was filled up by a ladle. The maril was machmeh. But if you have a baked item, and you want to put it inside your soup bowl, here you could be makel, because you could add these 2 points together. That means, let's repeat the halacha maskana about croutons. If you have a baked croutons, it's forbidden to put them in a klirishan or in a klisheni, but in your soup bowl, which you filled out by a ladle, we will regard your soup bowl as a klishishi in regard to that, and you can place croutons inside your soup bowl. I mean, deep fried croutons you'll have to place anywhere. Baked croutons you cannot place in a klirishan or in a klisheni. But once your soup bowl is already filled up, we will regard the soup bowl as a klishishi and you can't place them in. That was the nutshell. Just to finish off with a short thought, we mentioned that Shabbos is the basis of Emunah. Every week we're physically testifying HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in 6 days. On the seventh day HaKadosh Baruch Hu rested. We don't derive our Emunah from Shabbos. The Emunah where we believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah was from HaSinai, not from the Torah. Millions of times, so we've all witnessed ourselves how HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah. Rav Hirsch asked the question, why was the Doi HaMidbar, why was the generation of the Midbar chosen to receive the Torah? They seem like such an ungrateful nation. They were constantly questioning, skeptics. After they witnessed the Nisim of Mitzrayim, they asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they asked Moshe Rabbeinu, HaMidbar Yeng Kfar Mitzrayim. After they saw the tremendous Nisim of Yam Tov, they said, Zeh Adova Shemanu Tov Mitzrayim, we spoke to him in Mitzrayim, we said, they were constantly questioning, constantly skeptics. Why were they chosen to receive the Torah? Says Rav Hirsch, briefly, because precisely this generation was chosen. Any other generation who received the Torah, the skeptic could have argued, they were fooled, Moshe was charismatic, they had slave mentality, they were tired, they were traveling, they were bluffed, they were fooled. This generation who were not afraid to stand up to Moshe Rabbeinu after all the Nisim, any time there's any point to question, any time there's anything which didn't seem right, they stood up and asked. They were skeptics. If they all admitted and they all agreed that they received the Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we know it's 100% true. That's why we derive our Emunah from HaSinai. Despite the fact that we derive Emunah from HaSinai, from Adam Torah, there's a very crucial part of Emunah which we get from Shabbos, and with this I'm going to finish, which is Torah Sheval Peh. How do we know Torah Sheval Peh exists? Obviously, Torah Shabbat Peh, not Torah Shabbat Peh exists. The question is, where does Torah Shabbat Peh exist from? Many places. One of the places where it's Mukhrak, that Torah Shabbat Peh exists, is from Shabbos. Shabbos is mentioned many times in the Torah. In the Sefer Divros, it's mentioned both times. Vachay Shomay, Seven Shabbos, Akashay. Keep Shabbos. What should we keep? It doesn't say how to keep. The Lama Test and Nachas are not said in the Torah. Yet, despite that, straight after Matan Torah, when the Mekoshes ate him, wherever he did, whether it was Kaitza, Ma'amo, Hotso, when he did his Melacha, he was over the Melacha Shabbos. Because Shabbos said, it's you. He has to get a capital punishment. How do we know what the Lama Test Melachas were? This obviously tells us that in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, not only the Torah of Shabbat was given, the laws of the Lama Test Melachas, Torah Shabbat was given at the same time too. That means, besides Shabbos being a date where we testify, where we all say loud and clear that we are physically testifying that Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world in 6 days, and it's the seventh day, Shabbos is one of the sources that Torah Shabbat exists in our Torah. May we all be zeicha that we should be able to instill this emunah of Shabbos inside us, not only inside us, in our generations too, like it says, the Shomer B'nei Yisrael to Shabbos, last is the Shabbos of the Rishon, to instill in our generations too, and to strengthen ourselves in the emunah of Tachon, be zeicha to our Tachon, David HaMelech, who says, someone has been talking about the Teach Vashem Chesed Seyavenu. Chesed will surround us.
Which one?